Welcome to the Digitally Sick podcast.
Hi there, and welcome to another edition of Digitally Sick. I'm Alex Butler from Foundry 3. I have Mr. Faisal Ahmed with me as well. Faisal, how you doing?
Hiya.
Short and sweet, as always. And we have a special guest with us today, Paul Sims. Paul, how can I introduce you now? Nice to speak with you.
I wrote Pharma Provocateur on LinkedIn the other day. I gave it all of 1 minute's thought, but a lot of people seem to have actually quite liked that. So maybe that's my name for today. Tomorrow it'll be something else.
So that's kind of a mix between Pharma and Asian Provocateur, is it, that kind of thing?
Yes, it's to try and boost my sex appeal, actually. That's the main purpose.
Well, that's good. We'll move on then. So thanks for coming back, by the way. So last time we spoke to you, it was basically at the early stages of this crazy world that we now live in, where I, for Pharma, basically had to go virtual with what are two very big conferences, both in Barcelona and Philadelphia, I think the other, the US one, isn't it? Yeah. And people have asked if you were going to come back and say what went well and, you know, the learnings that you've had from it and the experience. And I suppose anything that you can therefore help other people, say, for instance, pharmaceutical companies that are facing this at the moment with your experience. So I suppose, you know, it's a pretty easy kickoff, but, you know, how did it go?
We had really good feedback. Our NPS for the Barcelona event was 70 and our NPS for Philadelphia was 76. So totally unheard of numbers. I do have to caveat that slightly. I think that part of the reason why people gave us good scores was because we tried. I think that the fact that we, you know, turned around this thing in less than 2 weeks when right at the beginning of the crisis, and it actually didn't fall apart. And we just had this message of keeping inspiration going despite our isolation. I think that it was very welcome when everyone was really in the beginning stages of wondering what the hell was going on and needing that crutch, as it were, of being able to hear what other people think to forge a period path forward and to feel comfortable in what was going on so far. So I think that that was part of it, and that's not going to last forever. In another month or two, that side of things wouldn't exist. Everyone obviously now is doing something virtual, and that novelty factor isn't there, which is what leads me to the second point, which is know your value, I think, is probably the thing that I've got out of this and really understood. There are, unfortunately, a lot of events out there where the value is dubious. I would even say that, you know, I will happily admit to having run some of those events myself. And just, you know, production values are out the window. So being able to laser focus on what actual genuine business improvement your event or whatever it is that you do actually can focus on, and just think about that. Everything else is totally extraneous. Nobody cares about whether you've got the right lighting in the room or anything of that nature anymore. So just know what your place is and be brutally honest with yourself as to what your value is, and people are forgiving on everything else. So
you know, that is so, yeah, I mean, can I just come back on that? Because I mean, hallelujah, basically. But I've been banging on for so long now about a value exchange within these environments. And actually, a lot of the problems that people come to is when they digitize their content, i.e. how can we take what we currently have and put it into through a different channel, usually a digital channel, without thinking of to why someone would want to engage with that in the first place. Does a healthcare professional see a company representative because they want to see the iPad detail? Do they go to a symposium because of the content? What value do you have? And I suppose that's an obvious point, but something that, you know, you think's central to making something truly engaging.
You're thinking business continuity, and that's how every person that I interviewed at the beginning of the crisis was thinking. It was business continuity. How do we take what we have? Now, we in this event had a slight constraint that we'd already planned an event 99% of the way. So we had to a degree, keep everyone happy by turning it into something very similar, but we still changed it from a 2-day event to a 5-day event, from a multi-track event to a single track event, to, you know, we still changed some of the thing, but nobody else now has that issue. Like, you've all got time, you've had time to plan this properly. Do not just deliver a version of what happened before, is because you'll quickly get found out. Remember that everybody else is trying to do exactly the same thing right now, so there's no differentiation factor anymore. You really do have to double down on what that value is. And if that value is the social side of things, the exchange of things, then that might be a bit more of a challenge, but it's still something that you can achieve. So focus on that if that is where your value is. So absolutely.
What about, obviously not things that went wrong, because like you say, you had days to turn a, you know, massive event into a virtual event, you know, when it 99.9% been planned. But were there any learnings from it that you took, of things maybe not to do, or things that you would do differently again? Or
the first thing that came to mind was just the natural reticence that everybody had to turn a physical conference talk or panel or conversation into a virtual form. People were willing to go along with us for the ride, but they were super nervous, super needed the hand holding at every step of the way. I feel like we're over that now. I feel like everyone's zoomed themselves to pieces now. They can probably be willing to record a talk or something of that nature without protesting too much. So maybe that hurdle's over and done with. In terms of other learnings, I would say, I guess we were quite lucky that because we were going to do such a large event, we had a lot of resource. Like, we had probably 8 people in the background just handling the single live feed, each doing a different job to make sure it didn't fall over. I'm sure we could streamline that a bit on attempt number 3 or 4 or 5, but it does take a lot. You know, as the sort of main host, I had someone in my ear the whole time, basically being a stage manager. I had someone looking after the speakers as they arrived, you know, all sorts of little unknown roles that we never would have expected. So, over-resource is unfortunately something that I think we're going to have to do in the early days when we're figuring this out.
Yeah, that makes sense. Faiz, did you have anything you wanted to ask?
No, I mean, there's obviously a few things, but it's quite funny because at the time, Tom Ford actually released a guide to how to look good on Zoom, which is quite hilarious because everyone was trying to work it out.
Send that to me, damn it.
How to look good on Zoom by Tom Ford. What did you think of the technology? Was it up to scratch?
We were relying on domestic internet connections, which was a bit scary, and because it could have gone down at any moment if someone in the street cut the cable. So we had to have backups. That's another reason for the personnel. We mainly used a Zoom interface so that it was comfortable on the user side. Everyone was familiar or getting familiar with that. But then we actually plugged the Zoom interface, not we didn't sort of take the raw Zoom footage. We actually plugged that into a clever box, which then allowed us to sort of put graphics and stuff over the top of it and turn it into a pure video feed. And then that went out through Vimeo, which allowed a certain stability and familiarity there on the viewer end. Ironically, then Vimeo, the only time we had a technical snafu was when Vimeo in its entirety went down for 10 minutes across the world, which was slightly embarrassing as we were obviously hosting a presentation about how to, you know, ensure digital continuity at that very moment. So, you know, how it always is, right? But apart from that, we were able to work it out. So it's definitely possible, just, you know, in a very short period of time to put it all together. Obviously, do dress rehearsals. We did 4 dress rehearsals during the weekend right before it started, and my God, we would have totally collapsed if we hadn't have done that.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. Do you because we live in a world of ADHD, so no one, I mean, my attention span is probably 2 seconds. How did you keep people engaged and?
I don't know whether we did. Like, it was hard for me to see how much of a refresh rate. I think people stayed online for about an hour on average. don't have the expectation that people are going to stay there all day. Of course they're not going to stay there all day. They've got their emails right next to them. They've got their boss asking them for meetings. So don't expect it. Every talk had to be maximum of 15 minutes long. I pre-recorded a load of short interviews to kind of cut it up so that it wasn't just a pure long sort of single stream in the experience. And I feel like we know the answer to this question. We watch TV, we watch YouTube. We know the answer to this question. It's just being willing to actually cut it off after 5, 10, 15 minutes, whatever it is that you decide is the right length of time. Because it's, you know, people just get lazy on the production value on that side of things. So just be true to yourself. Know how you consume it yourself and act accordingly.
Can I ask a bit of a cheeky question, but it's a genuine one, which is that, you know, if you talk about, you know, what engages people or the reason why people engage with content, should we put it that way? It's, you know, it's either because it's information that they need to have and they really want to have, or it's entertaining, or it's solving a problem for them. And a lot of the presentations that I've seen at conferences, I'm not narrowing it to either pharma, especially corporate ones, I've never understood what the point of them was. You could get the same information if you really wanted it from reading an investor report or listening to an analyst meeting. You know, it's all theoretical about why patient centricity is so important, or my personal experience with patient centricity, or how we're doing innovation differently, but never, or very rarely that I've ever seen, any real value as to what they're actually doing or what they've learned from what they're doing or the results of what they're doing. Did you mention value exchange? How did that go down with those types of presentations? Did people wonder what the point of them was?
Yeah. Well, on the one hand, consider that. But then on the other hand, consider something like TED, where the value seems to be consistently high. The novelty seems to be consistently high. What's the difference there? Why is that? Two reasons. Firstly, you see what TED has done before. So if you're asked to be a speaker on TED, you actually take it quite seriously. You find something original and you rehearse it to a greater degree than you have done. You know you're going to get a large viewership, so you actually take it very seriously. And of course, behind the scenes, there's a huge amount of coaching. There's a huge amount of preparation work. There's a huge amount of testing that TED will do with you prior to you actually going live. So I think that we have to be prepared to go for quality rather than quantity. We've definitely been guilty of quantity in the past. And, you know, I can't say that we're ever going to erase those presentations where you think, what the hell was the point of that last 20 minutes? I'm never going to get them back. And you've got to try. Like we really shifted in the last 2 or 3 years to trying to produce quality. And you know what the most ironic thing is? The people who you'd expect to have the most experience, the most seniority, the most natural ability to do this, i.e. the leaders of our industry or the leaders of companies, they're the ones that always ask me for the most advice. They're the ones that actually needed their handholding the most. And it perhaps shows that that's the case.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And on the TED front, I mean, I did a TED-Med one, so I know exactly what you mean.
I was going to wait for that one.
No, you do. Paul's right. You do get a lot of, closely supported. And when I say supported, the major thing that obviously there's guidelines on length. You're very strictly rehearsed, although you only do one rehearsal with it, and then you're timed, and then your time's on the screen in front of you. But I think the major point, I suppose, is that the whole point of TED is that what is the central thing that you're trying to tell somebody that they can take away and use in their life? And that was my point, that, you know, anyone can do TED style presentations or as they think they are with, you know, big imagery and all the rest of it. But the point is there anything central to what you're talking about that's of value to people? And I suppose that was my major point, you know, and there was a lot of presentations, not in the Congress or the conference, but just generally corporate ones where I just don't understand what the value is of what people are saying. Yeah. And I suppose maybe the virtual stuff will force people to try and distill why they're speaking to people about what they're, you know, about what they're speaking about.
I think in the short term, you're going to get a massive quantity over quality issue because the barrier to entry is lower. You don't have to hire a venue and spend, you know, gazillion pounds on flights and hotels. So you're going to get everyone throwing in. I actually seriously worry for the next sort of 3 to 6 month period. I think that we're going to get very zoomed out. And I personally, I'm pivoting entirely. I want to produce a totally different kind of content and move away from running these virtual meetings, because I just think we're going to be very bored of them later in the year.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. No, that makes sense. So, was there anything else from the whole experience that you know, that we could say learn from, or obviously already mentioned a number of things?
But... a sort of wider kind of hope that I think that some of this needs to be here to stay. I don't know what the hybrid version of this might look like a year from now, but what I do know is that the medical meetings, which are obviously the meetings that the listening audience probably identifies with most, they've been long overdue a digital change. You know, yeah. Why is there not a Netflix for medical content yet? I know that people have tried it, but where is it? Like, it's such an obvious, from a consumer point of view, it's such an obvious no-brainer. It's merely the lack of momentum with the medical societies, etc., that has stopped this happening. And of course, they wish to be protective over their main revenue source, which has been exhibitions, exhibition stands paid for by pharma companies. So, you know, they've been forced now out of that business. They are going to have to find a different business model to make this work. And people should be prepared for that change.
Do you know, that's a really interesting, because it goes back to value, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Which is that, you know, why does somebody go to a medical congress? We've spoken about this before, but you know, it's for their continual education, professional development, because they are networking. It's learning about the latest kind of best practice and how they can apply that to their own clinical practice. And there's a whole list of things that people say, of which going to a booth in an exhibition hall is not on that list. It doesn't mean to say doctors and healthcare professionals don't do that, because they do, but their reason for doing it is probably not to look at the differential marketing materials, or, you know, to have a coffee or to meet someone they know from the company there. And it'll be interesting to see how value is reinvented in that space. Because I think that pharma's had a, you know, it's had its satellite symposiums, it's had its exhibition stand. But actually, could it now forge itself a much more valuable presence at these congresses? A presence it probably deserves, to be honest, rather than just marketing sponsor.
It will force the higher quality. I mean, exhibitions are a form of interruption marketing, and I put old-style TV advertising into that same bracket, i.e. you want to watch your favourite programme, but you've got to deal with 5 minutes of ads to do with it. And then look at, obviously, what first HBO and then Netflix and Amazon Prime have been able to do about the viewing experience, and terrestrial TV for the younger generation is almost non-existent now. So you've got to find a way to be more valuable. It's simple as that, and it sounds stupidly straightforward. But if you can't deliver content that is genuinely interesting, then don't show up.
Yeah, yeah. I think when you talk about like the broadcast advertising and the push messaging, I mean I've hated those for years and stuff. I obviously wrote Skip Ad in 5 about it as well. And I think we now have to treat, and I think we have to do this now, is just treat marketing as a service. Like, how do we create meaningful experiences? And I know all three of us have been banging on about this for years and stuff, but do you think it's going to be forced now to do?
In the longer term, yeah. I do worry, as I say, about the next 3 to 6 months, where I think people are just digitizing existing stuff. Then there'll be realization they've got zero traction, zero genuinely meaningful follow-up from any of these so-called interactions that they've had, and that will force it'll go back into the workforce. I think that we'll have a smaller but higher quality workforce within our companies. I just don't think we're going to sustain the same number of sales reps, MSLs or field staff in general from what we've had. Of course we will retrain some of them, of course some of the best ones will be able to migrate. But it's going to be a significant change when you compare how we are now with how we are 18 months from now, for sure.
What's quite interesting about that is that I think, to Pfizer's point, absolutely you need to understand what your service is, what your problem is, what problem you're solving. That when it comes to this current environment, you know, when you think of iPad open rates, you know, sometimes ludicrously low, and that's when someone's been invited in to speak to a doctor about something. They've obviously maybe got a relationship. Even then, the open rates sometimes are less than 10%. So it doesn't even make logical sense to take that content and make it, you know, kind of self-directed. Because, well, I believe we need to expand on that. But interesting, when it comes to solving problems, like you mentioned in MSL, actually, that is a problem that does need to be solved. It could be a new medicine or an off-license question or an issue with regard to the medicine that does genuinely have a problem that can be solved by an MSL, if that makes sense. So you'll distill down, won't you, to the areas where real value is already being given by the pharmaceutical company to their customers. And I suppose what you can't do in these situations is hide when there isn't a necessarily obvious value, because sales reps have a value. They kind of personalize the issue. They solve individual problems for healthcare professionals. They're good at peer to peer and, you know, kind of saying what's happening down the road or what's happening in the local health economy. And so there's loads of stuff that pharmaceutical reps do. But I suppose it's translating that value, isn't it? Rather than just trying to translate the experience of showing someone an iPad detail aid.
Yeah.
I feel sorry for Apple now. Yeah. Obviously, they're going to sell less iPads coming up. But I mean, yeah, I think obviously there's the value there. But even if like little examples of, I know we talked about this before on the Innovation Podcast, I think last time with Paul last year, is actually just give out your mobile number so they can call those reps that are available straight away and they can send the valuable information or have that valuable conversation because they're there, especially the MSLs.
Yeah, I mean, I think it should be more than just the field staff that give out their mobile numbers, as crazy as that sounds. Yeah. I think we generally need a far more human front to our companies, and that applies to the leadership as well as the field reps. That's perhaps a conversation for another day.
Yeah, so moving on then, just briefly. So Paul, I think it's okay to say that you now have left IFA Pharma. After many years. Was it 2003 that you started there?
Yeah, I don't normally admit that, but yes.
Yeah, I can't believe I know that, actually.
Yeah, I can't believe you know either.
But I actually do, and genuinely don't have that written down. So, sorry, what was that, Fies?
I said that's good research. Well done.
Well, I could say it's good research, but I sadly didn't actually research it. So you might need to be worried, Paul, that I've got loads of information on your life.
I'll be sad when the stalking stops, if I'm honest.
So what are you up to now? I mean, obviously, you've only just, moved on.
I mentioned a new kind of content. I think that as crazy as it sounds, I'd like to create Pharma's first dedicated YouTuber. So I'm going to embrace my inner teenager and I'm going to attempt to produce a different form of video content from what we've had. And I'd like to, tackle some really pressing topics and possibly even make those topics relevant for the general public, who, as you will have noticed, have a far greater interest in our industry than they ever have as a result of this pandemic. Quite interested in being a sort of translator or asking some of the difficult questions. You know, why are prices so high? Why does it take so many years to develop a vaccine? Why do we operate in such an opaque way? And obviously how we can actually make the right kind of changes as well. So I'd like to really address that. So I think that's going to be my sort of public presence from now on. And so people will unfortunately continue to see me out there, but in a different format.
Cool. And you're going to look up Tom Ford's tips for how to look good.
Now that I know about that, I'm secretly Googling that while I talk to you, actually.
Yeah. I mean, my wardrobe is about 50% Tom Ford, so it should be pretty easy for me to transition to that. So that shouldn't be a problem. Excellent. Well, look, thanks so much for your time. And it's really interesting. We thought it would be interesting to get you back because, before it was just like a complete, not disaster zone, but it's like, how do we do these big congresses? So it's great to have the feedback.
Look, on how far we've come in just a couple of months. And hopefully that gives us some optimism that we can figure our way out of this thing.
Absolutely. And I really do believe that it's about understanding the value, like you said, and understanding what enhanced value you can give to people. And actually, I think it's going to be a really positive thing in the end. Obviously, the COVID-19 situation is not positive in any way, but maybe what it's forced with regard to our behaviours could possibly be positive going forward. So that was great. So thank you very much for coming on.
Absolutely.
Hopefully, you'll come back again in the future when you know, you become a massive YouTube star talking about.
Well, I'll be very, very expensive then, so be careful.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, if that's the case, you would be able to come on because we're very, very cheap. So thanks for everyone for listening. Any questions, of course, you know, or comments or feedback, then get back to us. And of course, Paul, who's, you know, very visible, so you'll be able to find him, I'm sure. And if you would like to, if you could subscribe, sorry, if I could even speak, and give us a review, that would be great. Otherwise, hopefully we'll speak to you again soon when I've maybe got my teeth in properly so I can actually talk properly. But thanks for listening, and I'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks.